committee needs to address because it has huge implications for the way the parliament processes post. So I was phoned last night and told that it's a formality, but we just have to vote on the bill again now. This is a situation that I don't think Parliament's ever confronted before. So I don't know what one does. So I'll hand over to Frank. And let's just do it now, and let's not moan about it. Let's just move on. There's something hilarious about this, but let's not detain the stakeholders here. We'll come on another matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members and guests and staff. Yesterday I was just asked by the Bills Office, as part of us at Legal Services, what are we doing about this? Because what the Assembly did on Thursday last week is actually refer it back to the committee to say reconsider it. Reason being that the D version didn't serve before the committee when the committee adopted this report, and as we said in the meeting on that same day, that's not a requirement in terms of the rules. Be that as it may, if we want the bill to go through in tomorrow's sitting or any time, we have to submit a new report to the House because there's nothing before the House. So what we've done this morning is just to amend the report slightly based on the documents that followed the discussions last week. So it's still in draft format. I got a few suggestions back from Mr. Bell from our office, which I can give to Alan. We can deal with the chairperson if it's in order later today, either later in this morning session or in the afternoon session. But we have to do it. The issue of the three-day rule, which is you have to wait 3 days after a report has been ATC'd before the House can consider it, does not apply in this case. Does not apply to a reconsideration, I was advised by Mr. Bell. So my suggestion is that the committee today look at the new report, the reconsideration of it, adopt it, and we ATC it later today. It will include looking at the C version again, which the committee has looked at. There's been no changes to the C version. And I believe the D version, the hard copy, is here today. Just on the issue of the final version of the bill, in the report and in the discussions we said it's certainly good practice to look at the final product before it goes to the House. At the time, on the 14th, an electronic version was submitted to members, I believe. I've spoken to Mr. Bell. He went and he looked at the stores. What happened on the 14th, the FSR bill was delivered from CREDA, the printers, but it was not distributed to members. Now, that is something that's beyond my reach. I don't know if what I was told, that stores didn't know it was a priority that had been distributed immediately. As I say, electronically it was distributed, but not in hard copy, and that I put in the report as well, and I understand the committee can decide whether to leave it in there or not, but what we have today is we have the hard copy there, so all the boxes are ticked if you want to look at it like that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Yeah. Where is the latest report? Why have we got no copy there?
Where?
Okay, so can you show us where the case is? Because we can vote on it now, so we can activate the process. As for the implications of this, the committee will have to discuss this because its implications for, it set a precedent, I was told last night. I was phoned again after you spoke to me. I don't want to mention names, but it actually set a very bad precedent. That committee had no right to take that decision, is what I'm now told, without conferring with the chair of the committee. Because any party can go there now and just say, well, it didn't happen. Yet all, we have passed a resolution that says we did nothing wrong. It was all perfectly on board. I wasn't here, but it's confirmed. There was a version of the bill served. We passed that resolution. So, you know, that's why I think this thing has far more implications. It set a precedent now that has to be undone. But let's not discuss that here. What I really want from you is just direct us, because it's not done in tracking for some reason. So where are the changes?
Chairperson, in fact, we did it this morning. First of all, the date changes. There's some sort of technical things we must still do on the report.
Yeah,
the date
changed
right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then when we go, the report remains exactly the same.
Okay. Carry on.
From paragraph 11 onwards, we deal with the committee considered the referral on 15 June. That was when it was referred back. Oh. I see this. And then one can decide whether you want to say after considering a legal opinion or just input.
Where are we on paragraph 11?
Paragraph 11.
Yeah.
Yes, paragraph. So paragraph 11, 12, and 13.
It's just our resolution, basically.
Basically.
Oh, then it's fine. Yes. All right. So I'll give people an opportunity to look at this. We'll vote on it at 2 o'clock. Yeah. In the meanwhile, you can activate the process, right? So as far as I'm concerned, this is the report, right? So let's start with Alf Lees. What problem have you got with this?
As when we talked about the resolution, we reserved our position on it, and that has to now be the same in terms of it going into the report.
As far as your challenging of the process, that's what I'm not the wording here. You still feel that.
Mr. Chairman, I can't give you a definitive answer to that question because when this was discussed at the meeting at which you weren't present, my approach was simply one of clarification. It was not one of challenge. And so what subsequently has happened in other circles is not what I raised at the committee. Thank you.
All right, then in that case, what happens to the C version of the bill now? Must we vote on it again? So where's the bill? Yeah, Tandy, this is hilarious, actually. It's unprecedented, and it's very worrying what's going on, but we can't now. Can we have the C version of the bill, please? What I suggest is so that they can activate their work, right? That we agree to this, we vote on it, but we give people up to 2 o'clock when we reconvene. If there are further amendments that have to be made, we can do it then. Is that agreeable? Is that agreeable? Right, okay. In that case, I suppose goes with the vote, right? Again. Is that right, Frank?
That's correct.
Right. So, in order to avoid any changes, we'll do it the normal way, which is, we're going to go through it clause by clause, right? Right. So, on the issue of clause 1, any comments? No. Right. Must they vote on each clause?
No.
Okay. Right. On the issue of clause 2? Yeah.
Chair, I'm sorry to take you back. I'm just looking at the report now on number 11, where it talks about the committee voting on the D version and 12.2. I'm sorry to take you back. My point is I hear that we have to vote at 2. On which version are we going to vote? I think the final version is the D version. And also I expected maybe the DA, because last week when we voted, we agreed on we took a resolution. He has raised, or they have raised an issue of them wanting to go through the final version with the D version to satisfy themselves, if they had an opportunity to go through the D version.
You see, if we do that, then we're setting a new set of rules, you see. That means we are now saying that until members all go through the D version, it's never happened before. So we're going to, you see, by doing that, what we are doing, just let's be careful what we're doing. We're setting new rules. We're not a rules committee. We have to vote on the C version of the bill, right? I understand what you're raising. Yeah, we have to vote on the C version. The D version is a printed version, right? And what used to happen before, the chairperson used to just check that what's in the D version and what was adopted by the committee in the C version is exactly the same. Now, with the tracking system these days, it's much easier to do that. And we have passed a resolution. Part of the resolution is included here. So what I'm saying in short is, if we pose that question, it's going to be a precedent now that, you know, it's going to mean the gap between the time you vote on a bill and the gap and you print the bill and so on. So I just think let's forego that question. We'll do what the rules say. The rules say, and until the rules change, if the rules change, we are agreed, we will do it that way. The rules are clear. We vote on the C version of the bill, right? That's what we're going to vote on. And then secondly, we vote on this report, but take into account our resolution of last week. And I was phoned by some senior office bearer to do exactly that. So I'm acting on behalf of other people also who feel we mustn't open a precedent here. That's all I'm saying. Derek?
Yeah, understood, Chairperson, but the report, this 11 of the report, says correctly, committees usually vote on the C versions of bills. And then it goes on to say, and the committee acted correctly in doing this with the bill. That's where I'm a bit confused. Now, according to this report, it's been done. So,
fine.
Well, let's get it from the hilarity and say, have we or have we not voted on it? And if we have, why are we wanting to vote on it again?
Because once you have the resolution, you're right. That's why I'm saying it is hilarious. You see, we've done everything correctly. But now, once you, in Parliament, in the National Assembly, the way they worded that, it shouldn't have been worded like that. They said we must report further. I don't want to expose people here. I just take my word for it. When I ask them, what does that mean? I don't want to repeat what they said. So in other words, as a chair, it obliges me to say, the decision taken by the programming committee last week was wrong and unprecedented. That must be, I think they're going to rectify that either tomorrow or shortly. That they can't do that, what they've done. And it was misinformation. I don't think the person deliberately did that. Secondly, we have already taken a resolution unanimously, apart from the DA, who haven't taken a position yet, that what was done was correct. Thirdly, the reason we have to do it again, as Frank explained, and I was phoned after Frank spoke to me, is because the resolution passed by the House is also, frankly, wrong. So, you know, we can pass a motion of condemnation of very powerful people, but I don't think we want to do that here. So, I just feel we should agree to vote on it now, on the understanding that people have up till 2 o'clock to come back, you know, and say, look, there's a sentence wrong here, a sentence wrong there. Is that okay? Tandi, don't complicate life, please.
I'm not going to complicate. I'm trying to make your work easy, Chair. You see, if the powers that might be are jittery, they need to advise us. You see, you are a propagandist. You are putting it very nicely in words. I know you, and those who doesn't know you will never understand you. You see, the programming committee doesn't make a legal mistake in front of legal experts like Advocate Jenkins when they put words in a legislation. Now, I'm going to ask Mazambani for the last time. If there is anything that you think that you have omitted, this is the FSR bill, it's not any other bill, you see. Can you point it to us? Because we want to finish the work. If there is jitterness somewhere, you see. It's not about voting only. It's the C list. That's the one we finalized. So it's let's not confuse what we're doing. So can we be pointed? Let us go to that specific one so that we finish this thing. Because it's fine. We can go home without voting for it. You can deal with it. You know the process. The process will make us that when you come in the next court. It's fine. I can stay here, work on it. But can we be pointed? The jitterness. It's not the sensitivities of the market. If that's the case, let's be told. Or people are still consulting and they've not managed to finish their consultations. That's okay. Still, we understand. Maybe by the afternoon, we'll be given the go-ahead, you see. Fine. It's still fine. I think I've made your work easy.
Then you're setting a precedent, won't you? But fine, look, I want to move on. If that's the committee's view, you want to ask Elfleas, we just bring it for this specific occasion. Can we minute that? We are not going to do this in future. Because that's going to be any party could come here and hold the whole press up. It'll become filibustering. Do you understand what's going to happen, Tandi? It's another form of filibustering. I'm not saying, Alf, you intended it. But the consequence has been enormous for us, because I keep getting called all the time outside of me to handle this thing in a particular way. I'm trying to do it like that. I would have preferred a study group meeting so that we're clear what I've been asked to do. But fine, Alf, since that's the way two people of the committee feel, that's the way, can you respond to the question?
Mr. Chairman, I'm flattered that this opportunity has been given to me, and somewhat disappointed that I'm simply going to say I can't respond to the question. put our position, we reserve our position. That's where it stays. Thank you.
We're also bound by the same rules that all of us are. And what happened last week was outrageous, actually, put it mildly. It bordered on almost lying there, so, by somebody. But fine, let's move on. We want to now go through... We first, colleagues, deal with the report. I mean, the bill and then the report. Yes, my friend?
Thanks, Chair. You know, I'm an alternate member of this committee, but I got the word from Honorable Shivambu that we can agree to it.
This is hilarious. There's no other word, Derek. Hilarious. If you've been around. This is sitting, it's laughable, actually. It's the sort of thing Hogarth's not listening. Okay, let me just stop.
I'm just clarifying that when it comes to matters of transformation, Honorable Shivambu has always displayed high levels of progression.
Yeah, no, we agree. He's captured by the Yeah, what?
You see now, Che, tomorrow we will object to everything and you have a problem. They are not captured by nobody. The Honorable Deputy President of the EFF is not captured. The only way he's captured is only in the EFF, not in the EFF.
My sister, it's fine. Please behave. We have important stakeholders here. Right. Now we're going to do it solely by the book, right? Given what's happened. So, clause 3, clause 4. Oh, sorry, it's easier if I do the whole clause, right? Rather than the sub-clauses. So clause 106, clause 79 we've done, clause 58 we've done. Clause 106, clause 129, turn to page 3, colleagues. Clause 132, clause 135, clause 137, clause 138, clause 140, clause 160, clause 161, clause 162, clause 163, 165, 166, clause 214, and then schedule 4. So can somebody move for the bill as a whole? Tandi, seconder, Dikeledi. Thank you. On the report, the condition is you move for the report and second it on the understanding that all members have up to the 2 o'clock reconvening of the meeting to come back for any changes that might be necessary. To be fair, I haven't read this thing. I was battling to get hold of Mr. Jenkins, who was in a team working on this. And so I would also like to look at it. So for now, on the understanding that we can come back at 2, is there a mover for the report as is? We can amend it. Tandi, is there a seconder? Yeah. No seconder, so... Right, okay, Pink. Yeah, the report. Yeah, we've finished the scene, right? Okay. Yeah. Now, what else is there?
This is some grammatical stuff that I'm busy with that we'll send.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's the report. So on. I'll also look at it over lunch. Okay. Having said that, can I also draw attention that, as I understand it, you're going to activate the process anyway, right, for the ATC? And secondly, that we're going to vote, we have a declaration on this tomorrow, right? So, having said that, I will contact the chief's office over lunchtime. Is there anything else, the visitors? So, I thank you for your forbearance. Thank you, Frank, for all your work. Unnecessary though it is, unfortunately, but this is Parliament these days. Can we move on? Now, can we very quickly explain where we are? When we last left this matter, if I understood the majority view in this committee, there was broad sympathy for the MAFR. What the committee was not clear about is to what extent it facilitates transformation of the auditing profession. We are not experts, and at that stage, we couldn't tell. The second issue that arises is it's possible, unless MAFR is handled in a particular way, it could actually undermine transformation of the auditing profession. The third point is that even if MAFR is correct and it contributes towards transformation,
one needs to negotiate with aggrieved parties. It's only when you exhaust negotiations that you decide to go ahead. Now, it is clear that the people who benefit from the current status quo are not going to agree to transformation. But they also, in their own self-interest, will agree to compromise. And the committee is not clear whether that process has been fully exhausted. So we asked for the parties to meet outside of the committee system. We also approached the new minister, and in our report to Parliament, we stressed that there was a need for the minister to play a role in striking some sort of compromises. But ultimately, government must do what it wants to do, and the IRBA must do what it wants to do. May I remind members that we don't have any power to stop the IRBA. Now, we have since established, through the media, and I was sent a media communication from the IRBA, that the minister has met with the IRBA and has agreed to MAFR. Now, that's fine for the executive to decide that. Parliament has taken no position on this. I also need to alert the stakeholders, in fairness to you, I know it must be very frustrating for you, but we've got too much on our plate. We've got major issues, transformation of the financial sector, this health promotion levy, we have got, various state-owned entities we have to deal with, like SAA and so on, and a lot of work. And we also had a one-month constituency stroke break period. So it's not been possible for us to come to a conclusion on our views for now. Also, our research team is completely under siege. So we are sorry that this matter has dragged on longer than we meant to, but here we are. And the idea today is to focus on transformation of the auditing profession, but also at the same time looking at to what extent the MAFR facilitates that or doesn't. And so we will try to give an extra 15 minutes at least till 1:15. We're sitting again at 2 o'clock. So maybe we can go up to 1:25 or so. But the main point is that we're not going to take any final decisions anytime soon. It's likely our final report will only emerge when we come back in late August, and we'll go to the House as well, probably in mid-September. But there's nothing we can do about that. We just have these limits. Thank you very much. So the program requires the SAIC. Can we just check, is everybody here? The two black focused organizations are here. We've given you less time because we prefer, obviously, umbrella bodies. And then, so on. So each of you's got 15 minutes. In the other case, you've all got 25. Aziz Saik is here. Is IRBA here? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Is the board chair here of the IRBA? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Right. Shall we start, Terence, with you?
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start off by first apologizing for the chairman of board chair of SAICA, who was invited to make his presentation but could not make it, and has delegated me to come here because we're preparing for the AGM tomorrow. And also to thank the honorable members and the colleagues in the profession for being part of this journey. Let me start off, Chair, by just reiterating I've circulated a paper with one slide, like a wheel like this, which I'm just going to go through. Basically, this presentation is informed by the deliberations we held in this committee when we started these discussions and were invited here. And we got the message quite clearly from the committee that as a profession, please do something to deal with the issues of transformation. And specifically, there was a pointed plea for SAICA to do something about the issues of transformation in the profession. And building on that signal, we have since engaged as a profession holistically to say, let's come together and unite come up with something that will make sure that the profession is responding to the expectations of the stakeholders like yourselves. And I guess the stakeholders that work with the auditing industry. And it's in this light, Chair, that we have also engaged with the IRBA to invite them as part of this process. And I single out the IRBA because the rest of the profession is, especially the auditing profession, is regulated by the IRBA. But the other parts of the profession are not regulated by the IRBA. So progress since then is that we have formed a forum as under the auspices of SAICA. We volunteered to lead this. You can click to the next slide, Lindy. And this forum is meant to look at a unified process of transforming the profession. And our aim is to come up with a single reference point when it comes to the transformation of the profession, which we want to call the transformation blueprint for the chartered accountancy profession in South Africa. We have met twice, and the players in this process are basically everybody in the profession, from SAICA to the black practitioners, to ABASA, to African Women Chartered Accountants, to the academics, to commerce and industry, the forum of audit committee chairs, and the list goes on. So we basically have embraced everyone. The only players that are not as yet part of this are the regulators. And in our first session, we were quite clear that we need to have a common and a single view or vision of the factual reality of the profession, because we realize that we always comment about what does transformation look like in the profession in different ways. And it was important for us not to continue doing that and to have one common message when we talk about profession, which is informed by one common reference point. And that common reference point is about what is included in the charter of the profession, which is about all working together to transform the profession to be a meaningful player in supporting a thriving economy, and doing that in a manner that is in fact reflective of the demographics of the country. So that's basically what we're all aiming towards. And perhaps I can, in this respect, just give you a sense of what the statistics look like. And these are simple statistics. I'm not going to even display on the screen. If you look at the profession profile so far, it's 25% black, it's 75% white overall. And that's where we stand. Obviously, there's differentiation between, Indians, colors, and Africans. If you look at the children that are at university and doing final year, which is what we call CTA or honors, that are ready to write the final qualifying exam, we've got the opposite of those statistics. We've got 75% blacks and 25% white. If you look at the pass rates of the people that are writing our exams, both the first part of the exam and the second part of the exam, we basically have got 60% pass rate coming from blacks as we speak. And if you look at the group that is currently doing traineeship or articles, 60% of those are black. So what that says to me is that the profession has actually moved mountains in building a sustainable pipeline and platform for an irreversible transformation wave. And this is what we need to build on now as a collective. And we know we're near perfect. We know that there's still a lot of room to cover, to in fact excel at this kind of early gains and early signals. And for that to happen, we need to work together as a profession. If I give you the indication of the level of activism and participation in transforming the profession, going to schools and doing doing all the things that are basically going to make the profession to transform meaningfully and sustainably. We'll be lucky if 5% of our members are active in this area. And our aim is to at least get a minimum of 20% of our members to be active in this area. And that ratio, I'm citing it because part of that, the aspirate 20% that we're looking for is also going to come from amongst ourselves as black chartered accountants. Because not all of us have had an opportunity to work actively in this area. Yes, we're doing a few things, but mainly in a fragmented way. We need to start doing things in a united way. And if SAICA is to be a conduit through which we actually consolidate some of these issues using our flagship transformation program called TUGA, that is what I would recommend. And we know that we know when we are working collectively in this area. So these are the gains, Chair, that we can in fact build on. And for me, in any way, these are progressive achievements to have in the pipeline, basically 75% of the students that are doing the final year being black students. And 60% of them basically passing our qualifying exams as black students, candidates. Now, so that's the basis of actually having this one unified vision. And in doing this, we're actually going to be addressing a couple of bottlenecks in the system, one of which is the capacity of the black universities, or what I like to call the rural universities, because the urban universities do not have sufficient capacity now to accommodate the numbers that we want to produce. And therefore, the focus on universities in the rural areas is where we are actually working towards. And our role as SAICA to accredit those is gaining more and more momentum. And once again, this is where we can work collectively as black practitioners and accountants to actually intensify this effort. In fact, started this discussion with ABASA to say, let's have a single-minded project that focuses on attracting black academics to the rural black universities. And if we do just that, we'll have a solid platform to basically get those universities to a different level of excellence, because they're already in the fringes of having a breakthrough in terms of their accreditation to offer what the urban universities are already offering. The other area is to get more capacity in the training of accountants. In this area, once again, there is scope to build naturally the capacity of our black practitioners as well, because at the moment the bulk of the trainees are found in the big firms. And if we get more capacity in the black practitioners or CA practitioners, we're going to have more capacity to actually build these areas. And these are the issues that we need to talk about here. And obviously, you can't expect to have capacity to train more accountants without actually strengthening the capacity of these firms. And therefore, the issue of access to business and all those issues are the issues that are part of this debate in this platform, so that you don't expect contribution to transformation without having the resources to do that through having business opportunities, etc., etc. And obviously getting more transformation within the big firms as well, so that we even create more bigger capacity to retain the people that are already being trained within those big firms. So these are the issues that are emerging out of these discussions. Part of these issues, Chair, are covered in the CA Charter that has been finalized by the profession about 2 weeks ago. And everyone basically has literally agreed to the CA Charter, is ready for gazetting. We are waiting for the support from the Minister of Finance. We know that the RBA, is going to object to it. That's the only player, basically, in the CA Charter Forum that has expressed a need to object. But nevertheless, all the other parties have consented to the charter basically going forward, which is once again a good signal. With regard to the charter, we're submitting this charter with one deviation. And this deviation is to strengthen more skills development as opposed to other elements of that. So we've taken the points from other elements of the charter to actually beef up skills development, because that's the nature of our profession. If we want to transform our profession, we need to invest more in skills development. And the bulk of that skills development is directed towards what to do to invest more in the rural black, previously disadvantaged universities, and many other elements thereof. But the details are in the charter, which the participants in that process have, in fact, deliberated over a number of months. The other missing leg in our transformation debate within the profession is involvement of the biggest majority of our members, which is in commerce and industry and in government, but more so in commerce and industry. Because our profession is actually represented less in the practicing community, but represented more in people that are sitting in reporting. And as part of this, we've invited the representatives of commerce and industry. That's why the CFO forum is there. That's why the audit committee chairs forum is there. Because these are the people that basically are the decision makers, or you can call them gatekeepers, when it comes to creating opportunities for what we're looking for in transformation, in terms of providing access to the opportunities for business and also providing access for opportunities for experience, because that's where that experience is. And this can, in fact, be extended to them lifting the level of traineeship outside of practice, because at the moment, the vast majority of the trainees that are referred to are mainly trained in audit firms. And we have not exploited the capacity that sits in commerce and industry, let alone the capacity to do more business with the commerce and industry, basically playing a critical role in enabling that access to business and access to equalizing opportunities for auditors that you talk about today. And lastly, Chair, as part of this forum, we have realized, and we did touch on this in passing, that none of this is going to work without involving the regulators. And that's why it's important that in addition to the RBA, which regulates the auditing practitioners, professionals, you need other regulators. And most of them are actually warm to this idea of working with the accounting profession to support ways of coming up with breakthroughs to have meaningful transformation and the progression in our profession. If you look at the Reserve Bank, the governor is comfortable to facilitate the consolidation of key regulators to support this program. And those can be the JSE, the Financial Services Board, naturally RBA, and many other regulators that are critical as part of the accounting profession. So that's basically what we've developed, Chair, with your guidance and your plea and your signal to say, let's do something as a profession to help ourselves rather than expecting to be legislated in order to have these breakthroughs. So that's part one in terms of transformation, Chair, and I'm very optimistic that this process is going to lead us into a way or an opportunity where our existing differences will be accommodated here and will be debated by ourselves, and we're going to find solutions, because at SAICA we are committed, and that's basically our part of our strategic position, to collaborate and find solutions for a better profession, because our sights are on having a better economy and a better society. But it must be in an environment where everyone within the profession is comfortable and accommodated optimally. Now, coming to the issue of the mandatory audit firm rotation, first and foremost, the issue of transformation and market access is a critical issue that RBA did put in the early stages of raising this debate, and we support that fully, that we've got to have transformation sorted out, we've got to have access to markets sorted out, and we believe that the vehicle that we have established as part of the transformation umbrella or blueprint should be a logical reference point to deal with this issue. And secondly, when it comes to auditor independence and audit quality, we don't believe that the issue of audit quality and audit independence on grounds of tenure can compromise or neutralize the issues of audit independence. Most of us have got experiences of the fact that tenure can never be an issue when it comes to audit independence, because people rotate, people move on. I've got a personal example of that environment. I mean, the Auditor General has been the Auditor General of the government books for hundreds of years. Yet, you don't have an Auditor General that stays there for more than 7 years. You don't have managers or senior managers that stay in those jobs for more than 5 years, because it's part of the policy of the Auditor General to rotate people, even though it's basically an institution that is constitutionally guaranteed tenure of auditing government records. And the same principle applies to the private sector as well. And those practices and those models are part of that. And therefore, if we want to look at the issue of mandatory audit firm rotation, we don't believe, as I can personally, I must say, that the issue of tenure can really be an issue. We need to look at something else. And that's why, lastly, Chair, the issue of, I want to reaffirm this again, because, I did raise it as the CEO of SAICA, that in pursuing this journey, we just need to make sure that due process is actually done with excellence here. The issue of economic impact and the issue of the impact of this firm rotation is important for us to look at very carefully. Up to now, we've looked at the international experiences. We haven't as yet had time to look at how this is going to impact our South African jurisdiction markets and economy. And we still need to have that time. And this is not about analysis paralysis, Chair. This is about giving ourselves time. And I did indicate last time being here that a year of doing a proper job on this will not actually delay or hurt the process. And I still believe that with or without mandatory audit firm rotation, going ahead, we're still going to have to do this work so that we can see what the impact of that is. And I did make that statement in my message to the members when the minister made the announcement together with the RBH, CEO, 2 or 3 weeks ago. The other issue I want to raise is the issue of legislative impact. And whether or not the issues of transparency and due process have been followed in this respect. I raise this, Chair, not because of being disrespectful to the RBA. I raise this, Chair, because of being concerned that our profession, if you can have someone who deep pockets, who want to challenge this issue legally, I'm part of a profession that is proud. For us to actually be susceptible to a situation where our process could be deemed to be flawed won't make me proud as a chartered accountant. So that's the angle from which I'm raising the issue of legislative excellence when it comes to this issue and transparency and all the issues that obviously have been...
Mr. Nombembe, you're at 20 minutes. You've got 5 minutes left.
And that is my last point. Thanks so much. So that's why the issue of the transparency of the process that has been was requested in terms of the submissions is important for those, as was promised by the RBA, to also be provided so that the people that want to at least satisfy themselves that due process has been followed have got an opportunity to actually be at peace with this decision. So that's basically just my roundup on the issues of mandatory audit firm rotation, to say that I don't believe that they are an answer to the challenges we have in transformation, neither are they an answer to the issues of audit independence, as I've just explained.
Chair, thank you so much. My name is Victor Sekese. I'm the acting chairman of BCAP. I'm with my colleague, a fellow board member, Tutu Masasi. As BCAP, we have made earlier presentations, and we thank the committee for inviting us again this time around. We welcome the introduction of mandatory audit firm rotation, but perhaps as an opening remark, we are participants on the transformation initiatives that are being taken by SAICA, our mother body, as the CEO has explained. And we encourage that type of participation. That's where we air our views, our aspirations, etc. Whilst the main objective of a mandatory audit firm rotation is auditor independence, we believe that the other objectives, that is transformation and market concentration, are equally important, and they need to urgently be attended to. Our presentation this morning will, however, focus on market concentration. We believe that a mandatory audit firm rotation has a potential to contribute to the leveling of the playing field in the market. BCAP members are predominantly active in the public sector. And I mentioned at my last presentation that the Office of the Auditor General already applies mandatory audit firm rotations in as far as it concerns audits that are being contracted out to accounting and auditing firms. But however, the BCAP members, we were stranded in that situation where when we get rotated out of the public sector, there was no opportunity to participate in the private sector because the framework didn't apply in that private sector. So with the introduction of mandatory audit firms, with the mandatory audit firm rotation, we've got an opportunity to be able to participate both in the public sector and in the private sector. The public sector practices, however, Chair, they need to be aligned to the mandatory audit firm rotation because public sector practice mentions that the audit firm have to rotate every 5 years, whereas the mandatory audit firm rotation looks at 10 years. In addition, we believe that the transitional arrangements leading up to 2023 needs to be implemented in the public sector as well. Chair, the audit profession is made up of three categories of firms. We have what is called the Big Four firms as the first category. The second category, we have a medium-sized firms, largely various firms and with international links. And the third category is small auditing firms, made up largely of local firms. There are about 2,044 registered auditing firms registered with the regulator IRBA. It is well documented that the market is 95% dominated by the Big Four firms. That means 5% of the market is shared by 2,004 firms. This situation, Chair, is exacerbated by the practice the financial institutions that restrict audit appointments to their respective clients to the Big Four firms only. This practice further entrenches the market dominance of the Big Four firms. The question is that, do we accept and live with the situation for whatever reason? Or do we become bold and address and change the situation? As BCAP, we believe the latter, that we need to look at opportunities of addressing historical imbalances of the economic players in the auditing profession. Recently, about 13 listed companies have changed their auditors. 11 of the 13 companies have appointed one of the Big Four firms, and only two appointed a non-Big Four firm. As BCAP, we are concerned that if mandatory audit firm rotation is not applied appropriately, the trend will continue. So the rotation will take place within the Big Four firms. In that case, market concentration will continue. Experience shows that market concentration can't self-correct change. Market forces are not able to correct concentration. Therefore, we need a deliberate strategic intervention to correct the situation. As BCAP, we believe that mandatory audit firm rotation has the potential, if applied appropriately, to address market concentration. The public sector has numerous successful case studies and experience as to how to develop audit firms, particularly black audit firms. Key in this respect is opportunity. Opportunity. Firms need to be given opportunity. The challenge encountered by BCAP members in the market is lack of experience. It's a chicken and egg situation. Where, as BCAP members, when we approach opportunities, we are told that we don't have the experience. And the people who happen to have the experience are the Big Four entrenched firms that are there. Therefore, we are denied access. In addition to all other factors, we are denied access because of that lack of experience. The public sector, however, has successfully addressed this issue, and largely due to the will and the commitment to transformation, the will to find solutions. So we believe if the same will transcend to a private sector, we will succeed in addressing market concentration. For instance, in a case where there are joint auditors, because there are many cases like that in the private sector as well, the framework can be enhanced to ensure one of the joint audit firm is a non-Big Four firm. And this has been done elsewhere in other territories, and also locally in the public sector. Subcontractor arrangements can be introduced to bring other players in the market. We also believe that active shareholder involvement that has shown and demonstrated some success and gains in changing, for example, the profiles of board members of Corporate South Africa. Yes, we acknowledge that there's still a long way to go, but there has been some progress in changing the profile and the demographics of the boards of corporate South Africa. And this is largely as a result, amongst others, of active shareholder involvement. We argue as PCAP that in similar manner, active shareholder involvement can change the landscape of the auditing profession. We thus may need to look into reforming how audit firms get appointed. Currently, whilst the shareholders have the responsibility to appoint auditors, the process is a very mechanical process where executives are heavily involved in the process and the audit committee and the board. And when it gets to AGMs where shareholders have to vote, it's not an involved process, it's quite a mechanical process. So there is room to look into that process and reform it to be able to achieve the objectives of a market concentration. There are other considerations that needs to be looked at seriously. In the marketplace, on a daily basis, PCAP members are encountered with situations where shareholder agreements, loan agreements, have as a clause that Big Four audit firms only can be auditors. And this makes life very difficult for our members. And thus, market access becomes very difficult. Chair, we don't understand why this clause is there, because if we have a regulator that regulates the whole entire industry, the three categories of firms that I've mentioned, and yet the market, for whatever reason, seems to be believing in the Big Four firms, then it puts doubt into why is it there. Because if we believe that the regulatory environment is okay and is firm, we can put credence and support that and outlaw such practices. I doubt if these practices will pass the test of the competition law, Chair. The other areas that we can look into...
You've got about 2.5 minutes left.
Thank you. Into the procurement levers that the Office of the Auditor General has in contracting out the work to audit firms. I think they need to factor into account that the playing field is not level. They need to factor into account if we adopt as a country a strategic objective of having more players in the auditing profession, to factor that in their framework. The other area that can be looked at is PIC, who are a significant shareholder in the JSE and who's been instrumental in transforming the boards of the listed entities to similarly be diligent in the area of bringing more audit firms into the market. Chair, last time I urged, and maybe your research team can look into China, the framework that China has adopted, and they've succeeded. They have two of the local firms which are in the top four firms. Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee.
Next is Apasa.
Good morning, Chair, members of the Standing Committee of Finance, colleagues and members of the wider accounting fraternity. Thank you again for this opportunity to present. I'm unfortunately battling flu, so I do hope, though, that my delivery will be effective. Chair, it's worth noting that the Association for the Advancement of Black Accountants of Southern Africa commends the Finance Ministry, National Treasury, and the IRBA for taking the bold step of initiating the process of mandatory audit firm rotation, MAFR. The significance of this move for us is that it marks the first step of challenging the status quo, of revisiting the importance of the appointment of an external auditor and the role that external audit plays in providing assurance to investors and shareholders that their money is in good hands. Now, with the South African market experiencing the credit rating downgrades, decline in local currency, economic growth outlook not very positive, I'm sure that news of the strengthening of our governance institutions in the private and public sector is well received by those who are increasingly showing signs of a lack of confidence in our country. But with the game-changing benefits that MAFR presents, we do remain concerned about the current proposed system's inherent shortfall in driving radical economic transformation in the accounting and auditing profession. And this is because of its lack of inclusivity, which I think that this case has really highlighted, by of the means with which the rotation process will be rolled out. The process leaves the determination of which firms are to be appointed to the open market itself.
Can we please get documentation for the presentation? Because we don't have documentation on her presentation.
The Abasa one? No, we haven't circulated any documentation, ma'am.
We can do nothing. It's an old 1994 story. People roll in here, although they get like a week and longer notice. And they either bring the presentation with them, and these are humans. Or they don't bring them. There's nothing we can do.
It's very difficult to follow now.
Yeah, I know. Well, they will bear the consequences of that. I mean, there's no reason why it wasn't emailed. Am I right? It wasn't emailed to them.
Just to perhaps provide clarity as to the framework that we were given. Firstly, the information about this engagement unfortunately only hit my attention on Monday. Further to that, we were not provided an indication that we needed to supply physical presentations. And in our last presentation here, we hadn't actually submitted. We had prior submitted a report which had gone out to the committee, but this presentation in particular, we hadn't tabled beforehand.
The norm, as you know, is to send us, and the letter was sent out. Look, let's not quibble. There's nothing we can do. Let's not quibble.
No, certainly. No, definitely.
Get it. She'll email it to the committee secretaries. They will send it out by tomorrow morning. But they are not going to go out of their way. They're humans, okay? And they are workers here. So you and I will agree. Yeah, we treat them with respect also. Thank you.
So my apologies, ma'am, and to the rest of the committee. As I regain my train of thought. Okay. The process leaves the determination of which firms are to be appointed to the open market. It assumes that this very market, one in which we're currently operating, will factor in measures to ensure that black-owned, female-owned, as well as small and medium-sized business are afforded an opportunity to service public interest entities. Our concern is that the business will rotate amongst the same set of hands, those being the Big Four and the limited number of medium-sized firms. We seek to see an inclusive manner in which we radically economically transform this profession, and thus giving market access opportunity to other players. The MAFR rules, Chair, applicable to public interest entities currently stipulate that an audit firm, including a network firm, is as defined in the IRBA Code of Professional Conduct for Registered Auditors, shall not serve as the appointed auditor of a public interest entity for more than 10 consecutive financial years. Thereafter, that audit firm will only be eligible for reappointment as auditor after the expiry of at least five financial years. The rules further indicate the effective date being April 2023, as well as the applicability where an existing entity becomes public interest entity whilst being an existing audit client. Chair and members, you will note then that nowhere in the rules do we see words such as black, woman, African colours, Indians, small and medium sized. Now here we're wanting to be more inclusive as a profession, and a clear opportunity is presented for us to take that step, yet the rules are silent. The only remaining opportunity for these words to feature is in the guidance, and like most guides, they are not prescriptive. No one is forced to have to adhere to the guidance. If I can explain why adherence was not possible or unlikely under the circumstances, I can get away with not having to look at bringing a black partner on board, black female-owned business, or even small to medium-sized firm. The onus then rests on the public sector and corporate South Africa to, on its own vice, decide whether or not to implement practices that are transformative by their nature. So we cannot take away from the efforts already in place from the various firms in the industry and the Auditor General, but the notch has moved ever so slightly over the last 23 years. We have spaces where there's a very low percentage of work allocated to large corporate audit work, and even less to black females. And I think that this really gave quite detail to that from a public sector, private sector perspective. The CA Charter itself sets aside bonus points to encourage the extension of audits or subcontracted audits to black-owned professional services firms, and specifically in the listed company sector. This is a practice prevalent in servicing public and state-owned entities. Established firms are encouraged to extend their arrangements to the private sector, including listed companies, just to enable black-owned professional services firms to develop themselves. The charter, though, however, recognizes that such arrangements could be complex, and cognizance should be taken of independence, confidentiality, the sharing of assignment risk, and client consent, which will be required. So although the firms may want to extend work to black-owned firms in the market, if the client is not in agreement, this will not be possible. This is where we believe an integrated value chain that looks at the composition of audit committees and companies, as well as addressing the CFO demographics, is important. The so-called gatekeepers that Dr. Nombembe referred to earlier, we need to look into. Agreed, though, these recommendations are slightly outside of the audit, mandatory audit firm rotation, but they represent some of the mechanisms that we as ABASA propose being looked into to addressing the transformation challenge of this sector. So what then can mandatory audit firm rotation do to address market access challenges, to ensure inclusivity and radically transform the accounting and auditing profession? Firstly, this is a right opportunity for the regulator to directly hone in on its transformation imperatives of the sector. It has already decided to shake up long-existing relationships by instituting MAFR, which is great. And we are cognizant that as a regulator, the IRBA must remain independent at all times. But if it sets parameters, it would ensure that it as an IRBA maintains independence and will not physically actually select firms to be appointed. Secondly, transformation must be included in the regulations. These will give effect to the amendments to ensure that MAFR achieves the independence and transformation imperatives needed to transform our profession. Thirdly, set-asides need to be in place of the percentage of work allocated as well as types of assignments that are provided by black-owned professional firms. Then when conducting rotations, it can be prescriptive and stipulate that, for instance, every third rotation, second, fifth, should be to particularly black-owned firms. These set-asides are not restrictive. They are restricted only to one firm and could be to multiples if the client deems so fit. And also, we seek to see specific set-asides for black woman-owned firms. Final recommendation, which is one perhaps not necessarily for MAFR, only, but does fall within the scope of the IRBA, is to look at the requirements that the JSE has in approving partners to sign off on listed entities. This, we believe, is a key stumbling block in ensuring that we can have more black partners sign off on JSE listed entities. ABASA is committing to working with the IRBA in devising these mechanisms. We are satisfied that MAFR does not conflict with our objective to see a change in the profession, but that it requires more directed efforts to ensure a truly inclusive, radically transformed sector. I leave you with this thought. A rose by any other name is still a rose. Mandatory audit firm rotation that does not have a direct transformative link is really no different to the current state of affairs. I thank you.
Questions, members? Comments, Tandi?
Thank you, Chair. First, let me say this. I thought this session was going to provide more answers than making us revert back to the discussions we had earlier on when we met the sector. There's quite a number of issues that I want to raise, but I first want to start with an anecdote. And this anecdote, I'm going to put it because it's going to assist us to see why the need to carefully look at the need to have a rotation. You see, when
when South Africa moved from a colonial apartheid state to a democratic state, it was never served on a silver platter to black people. Black people have to fight for that freedom, from the wars of resistance to the establishment of the African National Congress, eventually to the military wings, and finally to the ushering of a democratic state. And in that process, there were those who believed in passive ways of doing things, negotiating with the queen in their beautiful suits, thinking that sense will prevail to the kingdom and give people, you know, they went there with their polished English, thinking that when they negotiate and write letters, and they were lawyers, they were reverends, they were people of high caliber in society, who thought that they are speaking with men and women of reason. But it did not usher in transformation. It overtook the ANC Youth League in 1949 to have a radical transformation agenda for them to realize that Africans are not going to beg to get their freedom. So in all sectors of society, it's going to be the same. When women were recognized in this country, they had to fight for their rights, that we will not go to meetings and make tea with our degrees, but we want our voices to be heard. And economic transformation will go the same route. I'm talking to the former AG here. That in terms of the economic transformation and the recognition of the role of black people, it's not going to be served by those who already arrived. They will resist that, to be able to understand the need to include people. And they will find excuses. And amongst us, there will also be those who provide excuses on their behalf and say, no, let's not go too fast. You see, if we go this direction, we're going to upset the market. Therefore, we need to go slow. You see? And it's not going to be said by people with a different skin color, Che. It will be said by our very own, whom we expect them to represent this agenda. I remember when I played my role in the Youth League, at some point when I spoke in the meeting, somebody asked me, who wrote that for you? Who wrote that for you? Now I'm saying, we don't want to be unreasonable when we discuss this matter. We are men and women of stature. We think we should be able to understand the urgency of economic transformation in South Africa. We've been begging and saying, as members of parliament, let's get the stakeholders on the table to negotiate, so that it doesn't come as a surprise where things are going to be tilted, because the balance of forces will eventually be tilted to the favor of the majority who are excluded. It will come. And don't be found wanting when it happens. Now I'm saying, fundamental questions have been raised here, one that I've noted, Chair, for our homework. One, Honorable Nombembe, oh, I see, to me you're still the Auditor General forever, you see. You raise a fundamental question that you want to discuss the charter. You've discussed the charter with the ministry and it needs to be gazetted, and IRBA is found wanting. I think we need to find a way of engaging to understand what are the dynamics there, to unlock those dynamics, because you did not raise on specific issues that they are actually rejecting the charter. And it might be because the historical challenges of charters were that they were never implemented. Charters are documents that we can never hold people legally to implement. We have seen with the mining charter, it had to go to court for certain principles to be enforced for the implementation thereof. You know, the BEE charter also went through a process where it was not applicable. So the pudding is in the making, it's in the eating, not the making. It's not about the things we say, the good things we say, it's the things that we do. Now, when I'm saying this at the backdrop that just this weekend, I saw an actuarial, a young actuarial with master's degrees, standing in a street corner on Facebook saying I'm unemployed. He's got 3 master's degrees. And that, as we were speaking, it was reflecting in my mind. Now, the things that we need to look at, Chair, is the suggestions that has been put in place. I've noted some of the things you raised. on the issues of the 20% that needs to be taken into account, and the role of the CFO's forum, juxtaposing it to what BCAP is saying, that shareholders themselves also need to be included, so that it's not only the executives that vote and take decisions and exclude those who are experiencing on a day-to-day, especially when we look at this 2044 audit firms that are only participating in 5% as is being presented to us today. And Abasa raised very fundamental issues that we might want in the process to look at, maybe Irba will want to look at. You see, they raise an element whether should rotation be prescriptive and descriptive. It's a fundamental issue that must not also create laziness in the market. Because if you create an uncompetitive behavior, Chair, whilst we are trying to redress what has happened in the past, we must also be careful of not creating laziness in the process, that I know I'll get a deal even if I don't work hard or produce the best results. Doesn't mean that. So it should happen in such a way that it's incremental, but also it goes to a point where firms will compete. Because in a normal market, in a normal situation, we will not be sitting here talking about these targets. We will not be sitting here and setting an agenda. It will have been a normal engagement by firms without the involvement of the state. So people who are actually not agreeing forget that we've got a historical background to address, and that we cannot run away from. So the set aside must have specific targets of years. It cannot be forever, Chair. I think I'm saying, as I'm doing this, I'm trying to make recommendations that will fit into this engagement, that put set aside but put time frames on them, put targets but put time frames on them, until such time where we are satisfied that, yes, there is equal players in the market, and we have produced that. And with the amount that you have raised, that 60% is being produced by universities, let it be reflective in the ownership of firms. Not just ownership of firms, but participation of firms. And Chair, I don't know whose responsibility is it to make the private sector to understand that we need to move away from this issue of race. South Africa belongs to all of us, black and white. Let's stop doing what we are doing to each other. It belongs to all of us. If the economy doesn't grow, it affects all of us. So, the regulations, and that's where the regulators come in, to try and level the playing field. The work of the regulator is a very difficult one. No regulator is liked by business, because the regulator comes in and says, hey, and look, it's not whether the client prefers whoever. If the law is being put in place, and you will never be a chartered accountant and not be good enough, really. I mean, if you go through the same test, tell me. Because they all go through the same exam. Chair,
I just want to ask the committee how many other people will speak, because we're looking at half an hour for questions.
Let me stop.
So you used up close to...
Yeah, Chair, let me stop.
The quota has been fully used up.
Yeah, the things that I have, they will go to the recommendations.
Yeah, yeah.
Because to me, it's more about what people
want. Okay, all right. Non-ANC parties, please. Time for the ANC. Okay. No. You must manage her in the study group. I failed as a chair. But Tandi, good points. All right. Non-ANC people, please. Mr. Mishlengwa.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll be very brief. I just got two questions. One is around the issue of joint ventures, which I heard come out, but I didn't hear it come out expressed an envisaged model of joint ventures in addressing this issue, because the risk we run, as I think has been pointed out, is rotation amongst the top four themselves. And so you change the system, but as things change, they stay the same. So I just would like that one to be properly explained. Chair, one of the things, of course, which always collapses any struggle is fragmentation amongst those who are pursuing a certain end goal. I'm sitting here looking at 2,044 registered firms against a conglomerate of the top four who have built a buffer. And so we've got smaller pockets of firms here, there, and everywhere who are going to want to deal with the top four and probably then the second layer that has been alluded to. So I'm trying to just, where's the bottleneck in these 2,044 becoming an alternative top four kind of situation in order to be far more, you know, cohesive in their approach in then trying to deal with the status quo. I'm just, whilst I'm all for small business, but I think we need to be measured in creating so many players for a small field. And that this in itself may have the unintended consequence of creating a stumbling block of gaining experience, because the only way to gain experience is through experience. But when 2,044 are competing with the top four, the temptation is to go with reputational credibility, which has been created in the market, and you will forever find yourself at the periphery of the system in the market if you are disjointed. So I just get a sense that this in itself may not assist us actually arrive at a logical conclusion in this regard. So I'm just trying to gauge the extent of the need of being so fragmented if we're all fighting the same cause, because then we're creating so many layers of influence, so many layers of interaction and pursuit of business, which may, it's a view which I'm willing to have engaged, but preliminarily I'm just concerned that you have a situation of defragmentation on the other side and an organized business machinery on the other hand. Thanks, Chair.
Imkuleko, the ANC study group has unanimously decided to write to Nkosi Buthelezi that we want you to be a permanent member of this committee. Yeah. Now, I want to say I'm very, very sad, actually, that I'm told Mr. Topham is no more part of this committee. The best member of this committee from the DA. I mean, it's really... No, it's not a joke. I honestly think that. I think he's got experience that we don't have. He's gone to the... Is that correct? He's gone to the Appropriations Committee. Now, he's a man who's got a lot of experience, and he's very technical. It's very bad. Yeah. But I just want you to know, you either join the ANC or you come here all the time.
Can you remind me, there was a point I wanted
to... Yeah, sure, sure.
It was in my other life in this parliament, I serve on SCOPA. And one of the challenges we have there is that, and I always make this analogy at SCOPA, is that auditing has become guagogo, and that's what it means. That, like, I always, my son is 5, Chair. When he's at home, he behaves because there are rules. When he visits Ugogo, he wreaks havoc because Ugogo is liberal like that and there's no rules. And so when we create a system where we don't rotate, auditing become part and parcel of the system and may be a contributing factor to collapse of oversight. So I think it's important that we emphasize the element of rotation. It just brings me back to this other point, Chair. So where I am as well, I'm also trying to address this particular issue.
All right, Natasha, the ANC study group also welcomes you back if you want to come back, and you should.
Okay. No, Chair, thank you. I'm serving full-time on trade and industry, so this is the...
I mean joining the party.
Joining the ANC? No, that will never happen.
Part of not so long ago.
No. No, that one, I'm for sure it will never happen, but...
Your own leader said there are no permanent friends in any politics.
That Chair will never happen. It's the most surest thing in my entire life that I know. That one, it will never happen.
Thank you, your time is over.
No. No, thank you very much, Chair. For me, Chair, when I listened to the presentation first of the Saika, if I pronounce it correctly, it sounded more for me like they are looking to us for solutions, yet they are the regulator. And it sounded like they are but crybabies in the situation, in the transformation process of it all, of the auditors. I think it's 23 years later and four big firms is monopolizing the whole industry. It's totally wrong, and we need to look into it. It just can't be. They have to open up the markets. If we can't have a situation whereby it's just by four firms that is monopolizing the whole industry. I looked through the presentation because I was not here when they presented in February to the committee, so I went to the website and they said in February we need sufficient time for this to be changed properly, and yet again I think the CEO has mentioned that again. So we need to, as Honourable Tandy have said, we need to look at by when, a time frame. It can't be forever. We need to look at a certain time, because if you say sufficient time can be 20 years from now. It can be 2 months from now. So we need to look at the time frame, and as well as unity of the profession as well. It can't be if you go through the same test and the same everything, and then because you are now black, it's now perceived as cheap. It's perceived as you won't be able to do a proper job. It's perceived as you are lazy and all of that. That notion we must never agree to, each other. Because if we go through the same test, so tomorrow you are saying because you are maybe a medical doctor, because you are black, you can't operate on me because you are lying on a dying bed, because you are black. Should never happen. And we should guard against, even in this industry, to tell them, just because I'm black doesn't mean I will give a lesser job because of my white counterpart or because of my counterpart that have been in the industry for more than 20 years. So that one, I think we need to guard against it as well, Chair. And then as well, the BCAP has made mention about clauses. And that clauses, and it's like that. People put in those clauses just to let the contract be get into a specific party's interest. And we need to look at more broader in that what the gentlemen have said of BCAP about those clauses that are put in, say, for instance, these contracts unfavorably to black companies that wants to enter into the market. Thank you very much, Chair. That's just...
Till 5, so you can come in the next round.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm fascinated by the continual reference to the Big Four, when the biggest audit firm actually is number 5, it's the Auditor General. So, I mean, this is a bit of a fallacy. And so I'd like to ask Saika, in terms of your experience as EAG, how could this auditor rotation be applied in terms of audit of the clients that currently are audited by the AG? Because that's huge. The impact there could be much bigger than the impact of the others. And then, Mr. Chairman, I'm not a qualified auditor, but I played a role in that industry for many decades. And it is absolutely true that the four big commercial firms handle the big companies by and large, but not because of any race issue or qualification issue, simply because it takes a huge amount of resources and experience to audit a big company like Maspar or one of these other firms. So when I was playing the role, I was doing single sole proprietors and others because I simply didn't have the resources to handle at Dunlop South Africa, which was my previous employer, or Consol Holdings, which was another previous employer. So this is more than just about, Mr. Chairman, I mean, Tandy, we listened to at great length and very patiently, and I didn't make any comments under my breath about what she was saying, much of which was outrageous in my opinion, but I was very patient.
Committee operates by collective chemistry.
But Mr. Chairman,
it's getting irritated, but this is the way. Right? Yeah, but I mean,
No, we do, Mr. Chairman, but generally it's in jest rather than in meanness. I'm the first to accept that I put a lot of silly comments in, but if I ever say it in a way that's mean and hurtful, then I'll apologize immediately.
Change the character of this committee,
yeah.
Right?
So, Mr. Chairman, to get back to that, so this is a very complicated subject, and it's one that all the factors have to be taken into account. And so I would like to know whether the previous AG thinks it is possible indeed to fragment what we now know as the AG and use it as a vehicle to achieve the very important agenda of transformation. Because the Urba proposal, as I understand it, is, and many people are saying, it's about safeguarding and not allowing auditors to become part of the family in a way. Well, there are measures in the audit profession that prevent that. There's rotation of partners and firms and so on. So it's not a completely clear understanding of where this whole thing is going and how we're actually going to achieve it. So, yeah, and my real thing is we got this huge opportunity with the AG, and yet we're not even really talking about it.
Pinky, you said 30 seconds.
Yeah. I think it is important for us to acknowledge the improvement, especially around the relationship between SAICA and other critical stakeholders from the previous meeting to now. They are closing ranks, and it's something that one has just observed. But I think the second issue, Chair, and I'm not getting it from all the presenters. I fully agree with what the question that VCAP is putting before us to say, even if we are talking rotation, that rotation can still happen between the four, if not well managed. And that's why he also spoke to the Competition Commission issue that in one or the other, some of these things may also want to get into that stage. But there's an element that I also picked up, or something that I think the regulator must also look at. Whether there's within the requirements something that has to do with only the four firms to be considered, whether it's in the private sector, that clause or whatever. It's something that we also have to look at and see whether we improve on that, because that is not fair in as far as competition issues are concerned. So my issue, Chair, is that let's pick up on things that are still outstanding that SAICA has to look at, that IRBA has to look at as well, on issues that members or critical stakeholders in the industry are raising, so that we address those, especially around the regulatory framework. That's the first thing. But the other issue, and I think CEO, this is one of the things that was raised, especially on the was it the intake of people who want to be CAs and so on, because you have also indicated that it's 25-75, but if you go to universities currently, the situation is opposite. So where are the challenges? Why is it that at the end your black learners are unable to why do we remain with the 25-75, yet at universities the situation is opposite? So it's some of those things that you have to also look at. But SCOPA must also look at this, the role of the AG in making sure that it plays a role in transformation and empowerment.
Right, we've run faster. Can I just say, I have to leave here at 1:15. So, Pule, you'll have to chair, right? At this rate, you're probably going to finish at about 10 to 2, and then at 2 o'clock we start our next meeting, so we're giving a 10-minute break. Members have brought this upon ourselves. Right, over to the order in which 5 minutes maximum. Can make it 4 minutes each of you.
Chair, before I respond to the specific questions, let me just underscore the reality and our commitment as SAICA to utilizing the platform that I have put on the table as a platform that I still believe and want to affirm will solve our problems. I do not think it's a soft approach. I do not think it's an approach that is avoiding the issue. This is a platform that will deal with the complexities of our profession. We're dealing here with a very complex issue. And once again, this is a multi-regulatory platform. It's not a platform that can be dealt with by only one regulator. And that's why I did say that some of the regulators that were spoken to are willing to in fact come as a unit and guide the profession in terms of how to best regulate this multi-tentacled animal, because that's how our profession is actually defined. Auditor General is one of them. Reserve Bank is one of them. Again, JSE is one of them. Financial Services Board is one of them. And the list is endless, Chair. And otherwise, we're going to sit here and pick up on micro issues that are not going to solve the real problem for our profession. It's not simple. And I welcome the fact that the regulators are willing to actually come as a pack and deal with these issues, including the Competition Commission, by the way, and the BEE Commission. So there are many regulators that are involved here that can actually solve this issue. And this vehicle, I believe, is going to help us to actually deal with these issues. And it's going to answer most, in fact, all the questions that as members of the committee have actually raised, as unclear or you've raised from the perspective of skepticism. This is the only way we can actually deal with this issue. From a timing point of view, I have said we need, at least this year, to do this work properly so that we can look at what options we have, what possibilities we have to deal with all these tentacled complexities that have got to be accommodated. All of them are genuine. All of them are valid. But as a profession, it's so fragmented, we've never given ourselves time to deal with our issues meaningfully. And I do promise you that you give us this year, we'll be able to come up with a solution to these problems. And if you want to become part of this process as observers, by the way, Chair, you're more than welcome to. And anyone that wants to be part of this process as an observer, it's not a closed session. You're welcome to actually observe us in action and observe us in session in actually solving our own problems. That's what, as a responsible member body, we have committed to embrace with your guidance.
And for me, that's the only solution. I don't know whether there are any. I mean, it's going to include, I mean, all the other issues as well in terms of what role each of the regulators is going to play, whether it's the Auditor General, et cetera, et cetera. There are models there, which some of them Victor has made mention, which were actually engineered as part of finding a solution to a complex situation to say, how do you, within limited kind of parameters, give opportunities for inclusivity of participation in the profession, which was once again dominated by only the Big Four. Once again, even there, it's not perfect. There's still room and more room for improvement. You know. So on the issue of this 75-25 kind of contradiction, it's a simple thing that...
We've got about 50 seconds left here.
Yes, Chair. The profession has always been dominated by white, and white males in particular. Right? And to change that ratio overnight is going to take time because the numbers, I mean, 42,000 members, and basically that's 75% of that is white. And we're not going to get them away. They're there, they exist. Our focus is to make sure that the future pipeline, at least that's being representative of the profession. And with that, we know that in the matter of a decade or two, we're going to see that shift in those ratios. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. BCAP.
Chair, thank you. To respond to the issue of joint ventures, in the original discussion document that was issued by IRBA, to look into the issue of auditor independence. One possible framework was to look into a joint audits as a process to address auditor independence, but that fell away subsequent. But however, what's happening in the practice, you do still get companies that have two sets of auditors. In the banking sector, for instance, the Registrar of Banks prefers the banks to be audited by two sets of auditors. Now, in that environment where you do have two sets of auditors and other firms as well who have two sets of auditors, you could look into a situation where one of the joint auditor is a non-Big Four firm to be able to facilitate access to other players, particularly black accounting firms. So, and it's a framework that has successfully been used in the public sector, where big state-owned companies initially started with black firms being joint auditors, and through that, the black firms gain experience, and they are currently, as we speak now, are auditing those state-owned companies on their own. So it's a formula that worked very well. And I'll ask my colleague to also give input.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Just perhaps responding as well onto the Auditor General participation. I mean, we've seen a lot of support through the Auditor General, which if you look at the Schedule 2 companies, listed on the PFMA, actually through the mandate of the Auditor General, of which majority of them, if they're not audited by the Auditor General itself, they're actually outsourced now to black companies, where we've actually gained a lot of intellectual capital and quite learned a lot in industries which otherwise we would have not had the opportunity to get into. So we're asking of a similar model to then happen within private sector. We're saying Auditor General has started the journey and we've been given that opportunity. Now private sector rather can then enlarge and start getting us into those, be it through joint ventures, be it through subcontracting. We need to start somewhere to basically build on that intellectual capital.
Abasa?
Chair, maybe to just almost move on from the spirit of what Ms. Masasa has just highlighted is within the organization, our view is that being black is not enough. black excellence is what's critical and crucial for us, and that is excellence in what you do. And as you hear it in the stats that have been presented, you've got a lot of young black people who are coming through the system doing well academically, and all they need is actually the ability to really showcase that excellence and really build on it in the professional context at work in terms of the quality of work that they do. And all we have been saying is, yes, maybe today in numbers and in terms of capacity, one might think that one is not able to actually deliver on work. But if given the opportunity, we are wanting to develop, we are wanting to actually grow and be able to service clients both in the public and private sector. But in this case, I guess the bigger question is on private sector, and not be dropping the ball as we do that. Chair, you know, when you look at, for instance, the Freeze Must Fall, it's a reflection of historical issues that were never really fully addressed and almost taken by the neck and addressed directly. You've got students or young learners today who are fighting a battle that we had believed had been fought 4 years ago, but clearly not as well. And we do not want to see in our profession in 20 years, 30 years' time, those same young professionals having to almost take to the streets in various forms to actually fight a battle which today and which now we need to be clarifying and ensuring that we're taking the bull by the horns and really running with appropriately. Thank you.
Then move to IRBA. Where's Bernard Agalas? Oh, well. So can you introduce yourself? Okay. Basically, you can reply to what they've said and then come back to proposals by the committee that you negotiate further with the stakeholders, especially those who are unhappy with this thing and what you're still planning to do. You can choose to ignore them and tell them goodbye. The Constitution tells us we can do it. That's your right. But Parliament will come to its own decisions in regard to that.
Thank you so much, Chair, and good morning to the members. I'm Ebe Dlamini. I'm the Chair of the IRBA Board, and I'm with Herman here, who's one of our directors. We had provided the slides. We have provided the slides for your consumption. However, I think, Chair, you pointed it right now that I have the benefit of having heard all the discussions and the comments from the members on the floor, which were put so eloquently, and I don't intend to go through the whole of our presentation. Now, I think it's important to just highlight, before I respond to some of the points raised here, Chair, to say, since the last time we were here, we met as the board of IRBA, and we took a resolution to implement the mandatory audit firm rotation for the public interest entities. And there were comments made here regarding time. I think it's important to put to this committee that immense amount of time have been put onto this exercise since July 2015. And there's extensive studies and consultation that we have received and considered, including the feedback which we got during the comment process. And again, this is 2 decades later that we all have observed this slow progress. And we are convinced at IRBA that this mandatory audit firm rotation now puts agency to this matter. And we are doing it, of course, using our mandate, which we draw from our Act. And we considered to approach the Finance Minister before we issued this ruling. And he kindly granted us the meeting to meet with him and his advisors, and that was preceding the press announcement where he expressed his support of the mandatory audit firm rotation. It's important for me to highlight that the minister raised the concern himself around transformation and market concentration. and he put it upon us as ILGA, similar to the committee had done, to say go and work out implementable solution covering transformation and dealing with the market concentration. So he's definitely in sync with the utterances and the conversations that happened here today. And for me here today now is just to say our position is clear and our position is gazetted and we are proceeding with the implementation of the mandatory audit firm rotation as ILBA. I must point out that I was very encouraged by my colleagues in the profession who are here tabling in unison the transformation agendas that we all need to pursue. And I've taken to heart some of the shortcomings that they are pointing out to this mandatory audit firm rotation. And it is my admission that as ILBA, yes indeed, we did not go far enough. However, this is the step in the right direction and it brings this to the table. And it was deliberate for us so that we don't get our mandate and our discussions to be diluted by some confusion that we were not as ILBA gonna come and lump everything together. We deliberately separated the issue of audit independence because that falls within the very core of our mandate. That is what we regulate. And we knew that, yes, there will be direct consequences of that both in the transformation and the market concentration. That is why it may be appearing that we are coming short of that. We are not, and we are mindful that we are embarking now on a long process to start implementing. And again, we urge the other parties in the profession to work with us, and we already have this very sound input from them that are pointing us to what is it as the regulator we must do further to make sure the successful implementation of this mandatory audit firm rotation. One of the questions that was raised from the floor was to say we hear the 75-25 conundrum. What's going wrong? And we have immense research which I would like to hand over to Herman to just reflect on in terms of the statistics as to what goes wrong in this sausage machine. Because it's been amongst the many researches and surveys that we have conducted as ILBA, and we have determined the factors that have contributed to that. I'll allow him, and then I will conclude, because the member has rightfully been saying we were expecting answers from you, not to come here as regulators and share this problem. We send you back, and we've got the answers. And those answers, I can assure you, in the interest of time, Chair, I will cover them in detail, but they are very in unison with all the initiatives that my other colleagues in the profession have raised as the transformation agenda that we should all pursue. Thanks, Herman.
Thank you so much, Chair, and the members of Parliament and the colleagues in the profession. My name is Herman Tlhako. I'm a manager. Thank you. I'm not a director yet. Now, I think one of the things that I'm just going to touch a bit on is our strategy over the next 5 years. One of the things that we're going to be doing, we've already started to engage with other professional bodies, and some have actively engaged us because we want to accredit other professional bodies so that we don't only rely on SAICA in terms of the pipeline of the auditors. So that's one thing that we'll be doing over the next 3 years or so. Now, what's more important, and I think Dr. Nombembe has already alluded to the CA Charter, we definitely recognize the work and the importance of the CA Charter, and we understand that it's critical to the success to date, and we acknowledge that Tutuga is increasing the number of black CAs. But to the RBA, as we've already said, it's no longer about the scorecards and the BEE ratings, but rather about meaningful participation in the ownership. And as clearly said, we haven't signed the charter, and we agree with that because there were certain elements which we did not agree with it in terms of the charter, particularly relating to how the ownership targets are being calculated. But we've since set up a meeting with the chairperson of CA Charter Council. And just to also inform the members is that we've already done a survey amongst the article clerks, independent of SAICA, independent of ABASA, independent of the auditing firms, and we are still finding much more issues even today. Our research has shown that black trainees specifically and newly qualified managers still report incidences of discriminatory practices, decreased opportunity to training and experience in their workplace, and the limited opportunity to remain in the auditing sector. So we've done a survey to that, and we'll be sharing it with the big auditing firms and the small auditing firms going forward. So this is some of the results. In the interest of time, I'm not going to talk through the slides, but I think you do have the slides. Again, this is just like one of the important steps that we are having. As you can see, only 10% of the RAs are only black, which is about 400 out of the 4,200 registered auditors. And of course, the number is also similar in terms of the CAs as well. You will see this is just the racial demographics between the CAs and the RAs. You will see we only have about, 10 to 11%, which are still black, both auditors and both chartered accountants. And of course, as Dr. Nombembe has said, 75% of the professional members, both CAs and RAs, are still white. And just to give a just to explain to some of the like members, there is a difference between a CA and the registered auditor. So like a registered auditor is a one notch above a CA. Now, just to also finish up here, we have this slide, and I think we've shown this slide to many of the members. This is just a slide again to highlight that this is a slide which shows that, so we've done a research on all the listed companies on the JSE, and we went on all of them to see the racial demographics of partners that are signing on the JSE listed entities. And just to give you the numbers, again, you'll see even here, 75% of the JSE listed companies is still signed by white auditors, and only 3% it's signed by African black. Now, we've done about 350 listed companies. By 3% of the black, I mean there was literally about 9 partners that are signing on the JSE listed companies that are African black. And what's even much more scary, of that 9, most of them belong to one auditing firm. There is a big auditing firm which to date, at that time when we did the research, they had no single black person signing on a JSE listed companies. And as a regulator, we continue to be concerned. And there was only one of the big four which only had one partner signing on the JSE. And subsequently, we've seen that partner moved to another big four. So we even worry now to say, even now, we might have two big auditing firms which don't even have a single person signing on the JSE listed company. So it's a worry. It's a concern to us. We understand that it's 23, but we understand that the firms are working hard. But from where we are sitting, there is a difference between the access and the success. The partners are there, admitted, but we don't see that they are given the opportunity. And it's a continuing worry. We know that they say they're doing more, but from where we are sitting in, we are not seeing that. And so that continues to be a worry for us. Again, in the interest of time, Chair, there is measures that we're going to be doing in terms of the transformation, particularly relating to mandatory audit firm rotation. Our chairperson was very clear. We've said we're going to separate independence and transformation. So the rule of mandatory audit firm rotation, the rule as it stands, it addresses the independence issue. Our board will be forming a task team we should be looking at the implementation. And one of the things that we'll be looking at in the task team is to ensure that rotation does not happen amongst the big four only. And it's for that task team to come up with measures and to come up with a raft of measures to ensure that how will this rotation benefit the indigenous firms. Because last year when we set this thing, when we set the MAFR will address the independence, transformation, concentration, their profession came to us and say we are conflating the issues. And therefore, we responded to them. We said we'll deal with the independence issue first. Transformation is coming. We will address it and we will be working with the stakeholders such as Abaza. We've already engaged. The governor is also on board and they want to assist us into ensuring that transformation is direct. And also the minister also said to us, we have to get it right in terms of transformation. Chairperson, I'll hand it over to you for the future outlook of the RBA.
Appreciate it, Herman. You just declined your promotion in public, so you will not blame the board for your stagnation in your career from here on. Our mandate is actually clear now to work on the transformation plan that came from the minister. It's coming out of this committee, and our colleagues in the profession are concurring with us and have put forward their own commitment to working. That is what will determine now the way forward. So in my conclusion then, Chair, I will then talk about what we as IRBA believe that we need to be doing then in this regard going forward. We will facilitate the dialogue with our colleagues in the profession so that we all enhance long-term career prospects for black accountants in the auditing. Will advance the number of black partners in senior and executive roles. As you can see, the state of things now in terms of them signing on the JSE companies. Will increase the number of black partners with equity in the auditing firms. We're going to call, because this is the reason why we have not signed this charter. People do not want to move on the ownership, and there will be no transformation or empowerment without the ownership. We stand steadfast as IRBA on that these big firms have to move on that note. We're going to continue to engage with them because it's important that we get our charter signed and then it becomes our compass as we go forward. As IRBA, we will go out and call for this increased market share for black firms, women and youth, as pointed by Abaza, in the mainstream auditing. We will monitor and will impose sanctions and consequences as the regulator in terms of those who are not falling in line in this regard. We also propose that there be transformation in the governance structures to ensure that these objectives are uniformly achieved, because whilst even the structures are fragmented, they won't be talking with one voice and singing to the same hymn book. That is why you would have seen that as one of our pillars, we are proposing that IRBA be the mother body that governs all the auditing spheres in our country. And we're going to continue to hold broader governance structures conversations and share with our colleagues in the profession our transformation targets and goals. And it is important for us that we improve the attraction, retention, and progression of these black auditors, seeing from the survey that we have what the hindrances have been. And we're going to engage, and it is true that this can never be achieved without the full participation and commitment of the black four, of the big four firms, because they are the ones who hold the resources and are sitting with the opportunities at this moment. And we will continue with similar so that we expose all these discriminatory practices that are currently happening in our profession, so that we achieve these possibilities for black auditors. Since we made this announcement, Chair, it's pleasing to report that we've seen now new black firms emerging through acquisitions and mergers. Now, it's important that there are these consolidations, as the member has rightly pointed out, that the more they are fragmented, the more they are susceptible to be labeled as not having capacity, as not being able to do that. And there's been some ways one can make reference to some of the big black firms that over the recent past have said that wave has started. But this is then encouraging them, because now they are seeing opportunities in all these areas that have been preserved for the minority few, the big four. And we've engaged some of the companies that have rotated, and that also intend to rotate in the future. And they come to us as IRBA, and they seek guidance as to how do we make sure that we achieve this thing. So it's encouraging that once maybe you may find through the media that there's dominance of those who are anti this, and some of them own the media anyway. So, but there are those who embrace this initiative and seeking guidance already as to how they can participate. So these then, Chair, are amongst the initiatives that we are taking going forward. I thank this committee.
Thank you. Treasury, why you support MAFR, what your responses are to this, what are the issues you feel should be focused on in respect of transformation of the profession? Thank you.
And committee members, I think IRBA has already expressed that the minister has supported this view, and I think the change of minister went quite smoothly in this respect. As you know, the deputy minister has also been involved in this committee. So from National Treasury's side, we continue to lend our support to this, and we would like to see it successful. We obviously would not like to see a withdrawn legal battle about this, and we would like to ensure parties that they can come to us to at least see whether we can make this a success. The rule has been issued, and we will also support further initiatives from the IRBA, but we would also like to work together, and I think there's been a number of initiatives coming from the other committees like SAICA, and I think ABASA and them has also been involved. So I don't think we need to be too fragmented. So if we can focus on one or two big research committees, and of course IRBA's work with the board, we will also be part of that. And I think we can make this a collective effort to see that we make a success. Thanks.
What about the issues that you raise? You're not going to respond to them. We gave you 25 minutes, but you don't have to use it all, especially as we are well behind time. But is there anything else you would like to say? All right. Well, then that saved us a lot of time. Now, Tandi, you can speak for 40 minutes. Go ahead. We won't time you.
No.
Stopwatch cracks.
Chair, let me explain.
Yeah, Natasha, you're next.
First, you see, Mazambani is my colleague, and I like him very much. But you see, when you deny what apartheid has done to South Africa, will lock heads. You see, it is factual that in South Africa, black people were not given an opportunity to participate in the market. And I'm not going to be apologetic on that one. It's a hard fact. It's a historical issue. We don't want
to... Mr. Chairman, I have never denied what apartheid did. And that is completely untrue. He's never said that. It's not right.
If you say those big four companies on their own succeeded, I don't want to use the L word. We know what the apartheid government did to the private sector to boost it in the past. The reason why today the APSA issue is being discussed, it's solely the role of the apartheid government. It's a fact. We can't deny facts. I'm not going back to them. I'm looking at the future. That's why I said South Africa belongs to all of us, and we must make it work. And that's the attitude I want us to adopt, that South Africa belongs to all of us, and all of us, black and white, must make it work. And for us to be able to make it work, we must give those who were not given an opportunity. Chair, that's what I'm not going to retract. I'm going to, those are the words I'll die for. So let me go to the issues. I'm the one who said we must not do it in such a way that it will create laziness. I'm the one who said it. I don't want an opportunity cost to be lost when people are giving good service and giving people who are not able to do what they're supposed to do. That's why all its independence can never be compromised. We're dealing with market concentration here. We're very clear what we're dealing with. And I will never retract from that one. Chair, Saika raised fundamental issues of engagement on how the AG even spoke about the 20% that can be targeted for now. It's an improvement. We're appreciating that. There's many issues that are going forward. Where there is disagreement, it is the role of IRBA to explain itself to the sector. This is misconstrued at what it wants to do. The principle of transformation is not under discussion. It's not an issue that you can leave for tomorrow, it's now. The issue is how do you do it? SAICA made suggestions, and we agree with those suggestions. Second, a suggestion has been made by a member of the committee about fragmentation, that let's deal with fragmentation. Because if there are many voices and different messages, it makes the sector to be susceptible to vulnerability. We accept that. It came from our benches here, and we're taking it forward. I even made a proposal that where there are challenges with the charter that IRBA might not necessarily agree to, let there be meetings to unlock those differences. I'm the one who made that suggestion. Because we want to see a progress moving forward. We don't want to see the sector divided. Our member also raised a fundamental question that not everybody must go and want to be a chartered accountant or a registered auditor in an event that the market gets saturated. It's an issue that we are taking into consideration. So we are very considerate on how we need to deal with these issues. I am one person when we believe in transformation. We need to be careful how we do it, but transformation must happen. And we need to be able to criticize ourselves where we have been slow in transforming the country to benefit. Because as we speak, we still talk about poverty being a biggest challenge in South Africa. And who is affected by poverty in terms of demographics? It's black people in majority. If we talk about unemployed graduates in majority, it's black people. So the issue that we should shy away about it, it's an issue that we need to honestly engage, but we need to be having the humility to say, how do we help each other as black and white to build South Africa into a better society for us to be able to grow the economy? We need to be able to have both the public and the private sector working together. For instance, honorable members, if you don't know, my children play with UNICEF children. My children say that they are white. Because they play with Zek and Zek is, they don't even know that they are black. That's the type of generation we have. No, what, Zek, they play with Zek. Let's say she's white. I don't know how she's white. Because she was born in a democratic South Africa where race is no more an issue. But it still becomes an issue if the majority of black people are unemployed, are poor, they are not participating in the commanding heights of the economy. Let's not be apologetic. That's when people say that it looks as if it doesn't matter how educated you are, if you are black, if you are not trusted to be able to do it. Do you want me to give you an anecdote? I'll give you an anecdote. I got this morning on Facebook. A Canadian woman refused black doctors to look after her child because she wanted a white doctor. And the hospital said, you can go to Facebook, it's there this morning. They said, unfortunately, until 4 o'clock, you can't be helped, you can go home. So it's there, this thing. Let's pretend it's not there.
and we need to deal with it. We need to de-racialize and transform and work together. Thank you, Chair.
Tasha?
Thank you, Chair. I say now it's not advised to speak after Tandi when I come to the... I must speak after her. Honorable Chair, I think we have to accept and this mandatory audit firm rotation thing. If I look at the figures that Irba, am I saying it correctly?
Irba,
whichever way, it doesn't matter, but they get the drift. But if I look at the figures, the, what they have stated here on the JSE companies and the composition, 73% are white that are signing off, and only 3% of black people are signing off. It can't be, Chair, 23 years in democracy. It can't be. We really need to transform this sector by speed. And, you know, Chair, if you look at, many people have said, if you give people social grants, you make them dependent on the state, and you know, all of these things. Those doomsayers, if you're going to listen to this doomsaying thing in transforming our society and these sectors, we'll forever have to listen to it. Because it's throughout the board. If you look, I've just told my fellow colleague here, it happens to these other industries as well, your engineering industry. That member body is controlled by the major players. And it, I'm telling you, these four, big four companies are controlling the industry and they're controlling these member bodies, I'm telling you. So if we're going to sit here and play if we're going to sit here and be nicey-nicey about it and we don't put timelines to this thing, we'll come back in 2019, maybe majority of the ANC members won't be here, EFF will be in power. So we need to move by speed so that you can say when you are not here, you know I have done this, Chair, on your resume, at least you have helped. So, Honorable Chair, we need to really move it by speed and to support this thing. Like, really, it's uncalled for. Like, the numbers are not changing. And I can guarantee you majority of these people are even men, if you can even take it further, you know. Majority of them are men, and that four companies, if you can take it further, those four big four companies.
Sorry,
Pule,
the Honorable Pule has deployed himself somewhere else, so he has to leave. Pule, thank you very much for your riveting contribution this morning.
Pule, where are you going? Don't disrupt our meeting.
Yeah, he's walking out on my speech. He must be here because when I'm a minister, I will maybe be nice to you. Honorable Chair, in all jokes aside, really we need to look into this and we can take it further about that four companies. How many are owned by a woman? There's no woman there. And really, we need to transform the sector by the necessary speed it deserves. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I really don't want to repeat most of the stuff that has been said. I just want to, it may assist us as a committee, because the issue of the AG has been raised here, the role of the AG. And Chair, noting some of your cautions in the draft program for next term about us not being a super committee, to say if we could, because I know that the Standing Committee on the Auditor General is dealing with some changes within the structure of the AG and the dealing with policy and so on, and maybe refer the particular role of the AG to them to look at in terms of how it fits into the envisaged new dispensation, so that we don't bite more than we can chew as this committee. But Chair, I really want to emphasize, and I'm certain I didn't get a response from any of the responses, on the issue of fragmentation. Issue of fragmentation.
Yeah.
I still believe that there is no way where we will successfully deal with the issue of transformation if we do not have the necessary capacity. Now, I'm not saying that the persons in these 2,044 companies don't have the capacity to audit, but you need the human capital organized. I mean, we are sharing now. Nobody's going to give a two-man firm a big audit. And so all the times going to be the smaller than a skeleton, smaller than a jobs, which will be given to these firms. I'm still saying, Chair, I still maintain the view. What prevents a situation of creating a new black big four? Pull your resources together. Stay in the eye, this beast. And then maybe for me, we will be taking the agenda forward. We're not going to be able to deal with the legacy of the past if we're going to allow that legacy of us to determine, to maintain the status quo of defragmentation. It's what apartheid did. It wanted us to operate in one another pockets there. And now we're doing the same thing. And I think this just goes to all the big sectors. The banking sector, for example, it finds itself clenched by the heavy fist of the big banks. So, Chair, I really think it must be a homework. And as part of the roadmap moving forward on restructuring the players in such a way that they are a formidable force and a cohesive force to be able to deal with this, and to strengthen their ability to be competitive with those in the, with these firms. So, Chair, I just have that particular word. I just want to say, Chair, I would have been so much happier if the spirit of our meeting earlier on with the Ugandan delegation had permeated into this meeting. Now, I think I now share the sentiment you had earlier on, it might have been better. Chair, we need a closed meeting to deal with our own interpretations of how we can move on. But it sort of takes us back, because I think there's a collective agreement that apartheid was bad. And I use the word loosely, doesn't begin to describe the atrocities of the past. There's that agreement. But let us, for the benefit of delegations that are here, not go back into those discussions and hinder presentations that are being made. I just feel sometimes we want to get our own politics out there as opposed to the issues that are before us, and we run a risk of ending up one day with a fist fight in this committee. I'm not a visiting member, I'm a full-time member of this committee, and held up with engagement sometimes at Scope, and the Chair is aware of that.
Nkuleko, firstly, it has never happened in this committee. And the way we have evolved, is to allow people to speak. And heckling and so on to a certain degree is allowed. We mustn't repress people. We've had endless discussions, Mkaleko, because you just, you've got many other responsibilities. And you're an excellent member of parliament, in my view, and probably the view of other people. Certainly my view. I don't apologize for it. So I think you're an excellent member of parliament. Mr. Nkwanko also is very good. He's the chief whip of the UDM. We've said it to him as well. And what impresses people of my age, and I speak for myself, is we inspire that young people like you are around. We're on our way out, really. So for me, it's also your age. Natasha would be better if she was in the ANC, but also she's young. So, and you look at Zakela, you look at Antonia, it's very inspiring, actually. sorry to say you don't look it, but fine. Okay, I didn't know that. But on a more serious, everything I'm saying is serious, Mkoleko. You know what? Parliament should be vibrant and lively, and we sit for endless hours as committee, so I don't think we want to be too formal, right? But on the other hand, you're saying a lot of things. Firstly, does anybody else want to speak? Because I haven't raised questions because I thought we were running out of time. But now that I see we've got a bit of time, I mean, in fairness, I should have my 3 minutes from the earlier block. But is anybody else wants to raise any questions? Because there's something you really, not about your questions about, well, you're referring to a certain person. It's actually your last point that I was going to say also. I've got the same point here. That, you see, firstly, for those of you, the two of you, Natasha and Mkoleko, you haven't come to the previous, because you have other commitments. So let's be utterly clear. As I understand it, the vast majority in this committee are very, very clear. Transformation has to happen. You cannot have four firms occupy over 90% of the market. It's the same with the banks. Hopefully, some sooner or later, we'll also discuss in the ICT sector. 98% of pay TV is one company, right? It's got to be tackled. We have one of the highest monopolies in the world. Is that right, Tani? Yeah, of all the economies, right? So I don't think that's the issue. What this committee is a bit challenged by is how, if at all, the mandatory audit rotation contributes to that. And as I said at the outset, it can have the effect of undermining it. That's the concern. And we must come to a position now. We can't continue endlessly discussing this issue. So this is the final, if you like, hearings for this phase. We've had major hearings. And Zakhele has already done a draft report that he has to finalize over the next few days. So I think while race is crucial, we must also recognize that, we've said this before, those who become insiders, as Tandy has also said today, then become like gatekeepers almost. You know, it's not something that's conscious. It's something that's unconscious. It's also almost like global dynamics. It's happening in different contexts, in different countries, in different forms. So when we're talking of outside the big four, I think Mr. Nombembe said there are three categories, am I right? It's also the very small people. So as the ANC in particular and other parties who share broadly our disposition, I suppose it applies to EFF, but I suppose all parties, we're not just concerned about those who are hovering outside the non-four, big four, also those that are the lowest rung. Right? So if you're addressing transformation, it's be all three categories. Then I do agree, actually, you know, this is my own view, and I hope members and defenders, it's very, this is what Mr. Mkoleko was saying, that you can't reduce everything to race. It's about the structure of the other thing. You know, as Alf said, if you're a small firm, even if it's two whites, or two Chinese, or two Indian South Africans, or whatever, you're going to battle to have a big, even black-owned company. The reverse is going to happen. The dynamics are changing. So you will get two Afrikaners, even, let's say, in a small company. Now you have a big black-owned company, African-owned company. You think the dynamics are going to be any different? Right? You don't have to be a Marxist to see that there are certain national democrats, and most social democrats will also acknowledge that. That there's no sign that, you know, when you have an emerging African bourgeois, that it necessarily treats the workers on the shop floor substantially better than the old white bourgeois. Right? So I think that's why I'm saying we need a bit of work, Sakila, to look at all these dynamics. Race is terribly and crucially important, but it can't all be reduced to that. It's the structure of the profession. It's the norms almost globally of what happens in this situation. I don't think I'll go through, a lot of people have already covered the issues. I think members are hinting, we're not getting precise answers, actually. That's how I feel. And on our side as members, all of us collectively, I'm not saying I'm any better, we're covering the same ground, which is why, once again, I repeat, that before we start our third quarter, we have to move on. The committee has to be more focused, more productive, more directed. We have to discuss how the committee manages stakeholders. So on both sides, you people have flown in, many of you, from different parts of the country, presumably Gauteng. It's
not worth your while if you get the same questions in different forms. Despite the different vantage points which people are speaking, different stars, different trajectories, different nuances, I don't think, Mr. Schlengel, that the gaps are huge here, actually. I actually think there's a core. The DA is difficult to pin down. But for the rest, there isn't much of a big difference, really, attitude. So I think the committee now will have to plead with the members of the different parties to come with positions now. What I have since, sorry, it's enough, but I just got to raise this for deadline. What I've since established by exchanges with Alan is that in my absence last week, you'll agree to meet again as the four committees on the money bills next Wednesday. I hadn't known that. So one of the amendments we have to make to our program is let's do that. It also gives us a bit of space to get committees to actually, not committees, parties to establish some sort of position. At the ANC, we would like a bit more time. So we're suggesting that what we do is that we look at a report which we will have to give also to all the stakeholders a week or so to look at. So as we're talking about the transformation of the finance sector, what I'm suggesting, come back to me on this, in the next item on the agenda, we need 5 minutes to look at our program, that we actually get a draft report processed by the committee in the first week or so when we come back. I'll suggest some dates. And then what we do is send it out to the stakeholders, give them 10 days or so, and then we vote on this report, say, first week of September. So we've still got some time. Now, I think the issue here is many of the questions that are being targeted, it's almost as if we're engaging with the big four here. The big four are not here. They may have observers here. We're engaging with the professional associations and the statutory body. Secondly, there's a request to us to assist if we can and facilitate if we can, or at the very least monitor progress and transformation. So the first thing we can do is at least once every 6 months is call the stakeholders together and monitor progress. But insofar as attending meetings and so on, this is the thing the committee can apply itself to, attending meetings of your, I think it's a good idea. It's impossible for me as a chair to go to these meetings. If there's a Gauteng-based member of parliament from the ANC who can attend these meetings, and maybe one representative of the opposition or more, I think we should do that. So it's something the committee must decide on either now or by tomorrow morning. So then we forward you the names. So, you know, because you meet mainly in Johannesburg or Swane, it'll be better if you had from the opposition party somebody who's based in Gauteng, from, you know, a multi-party delegation. At the very least, it should be one member of the ANC and one from the opposition. But if more than one from the opposition to go, it's fine. You're not going to have a decision-making role, a facilitation role. So that's something we can think about. I'll leave all my other questions. I really would like you to be more pointed in your responses. We have tried to communicate to the minister and to yourselves as IRPA that, and maybe you want to give us an answer. Firstly, is there any sign at the moment that any of the big four or anybody else is going to take the IRPA to court? Secondly, it's an age-old question. You as IRBLT will be consulted, they will say you haven't consulted. Then we find out it's the nature of the consultation. Consultation can't be just a formal. They keep saying that you made up your mind, all you did is went through the motions, right? You're saying, no, but here's our list of meetings. Now, unless we have the meetings, we don't have the capacity of the UK Parliament with a battery of researchers and, you know, accounting and financial experts in their finance committees. We can't actually tell. So I would rather members suspend a view on that matter. We don't know. We can be given statistics of the number of meetings. But I'm going to challenge members. If you're saying it was effective consultation, will you prove it? If it wasn't effective consultation, will you prove it? So what we could do is refer members to what you have given us, a list of all your meetings. Right? Any member in future who wants to argue there was good consultation or there was not good consultation, we're not going to allow that unless you prove that you've read the stuff and the evidence. So I think we should not even discuss. They invariably,
If you have transformation, you think anybody's going to agree to it? Nobody's going to agree to it. Right? But on the other hand, those of us who want to transform, I think Kuleko was saying the same point. You have to look at where we are, right? What is possible within the conditions and the time you're in, and how you manage things tactically and tactfully, and how you take people along with you. Because as Tandy says, we all have to work together. Black and white, big auditor firms and small firms. In fact, you are edging towards that. Then the question I want to point I want to make, this committee has repeatedly pointed out, apart from Nkuleko's point that the firms have to unite, if you want to compete, you can't be a small player. I agree with him, actually. Can somebody respond to that? Right? The other problem we have is that within the emerging black constituencies, there's no unity often. You'll get like three different organizations claiming the same space. And as parliament, we're not going to give each of you 1,000 hours. No, we clump you together. You're a category of person. Trade unions, we tell them sometimes, hey, Kosatu, don't come here with FAWU and when FAWU's gone, five unions will come. We say, no, come as Kosatu. It's your federal structure. So can we plead for greater unity? Right? In short, I think where we are is we're supporting MAFR. We're expressing some concerns about the need for IRB to be a bit modest, less arrogant. You have the power. Negotiate. Okay? The ANC negotiated till 21st of April 1994. And even after that, we negotiated. We won 62% of the vote, if I remember. We still told the Freedom Front, you can have your Falkstad Council. Did the skies collapse? No. But Constant Viljoen came into Parliament. Right? We told the IFP, all right, we'll have 9 provinces. And the PFP, what were they called? Right? The Freedom Front said, give us some stake in local government. So we gave them a transitional period. So what I'm saying to IRBA, learn from your country. Okay? I think you must engage with these people. They are also transforming. That's why, for those of you who are not here, the most articulate spokespersons against MAFR were actually Africans. Right? Very articulate. Very erudite, right? They were challenged by other Africans. But the fight wasn't between white and African or white and black, if you like, the ideological differences. So all I'm saying, colleagues, can you help now? Can we move forward from here? We as a committee will come back to you by the next few days to see how we can play some role. We will try, we can't promise, because of the legislative load now, in November to call you back, but at least from next year, twice a year. So, can you respond concretely to some of the questions? Mine are more general. The only concrete question I've asked you is, one, is there some role any of you can play in facilitating bigger players amongst the African auditors, right? Two, is there any sign that anybody's going to take you to court on your IRBA? Three, even if you're 100% convinced you have consulted and you are doing the right thing, can you not do more to win people over? IRBA Treasury, and then we'll give all of you 2 minutes each.
Thank you so much, Chair. Let me start from the IRBA perspective. And thank you so much for these pointed questions that you have posed our way, and we're very equipped to answer them. As I said to you, this process started in 2015, 2 years ago, and in this country, transformation has been on the agenda for more than 2 decades. I want to start with the transformation and the mandatory audit firm rotation. These two cannot be seen as being mutually exclusive. Transformation is a business imperative in South Africa, and it will happen. And in this case, it can never be a substitute of the mandatory audit firm rotation, because it does nothing to address the audit independence, which is what we are raising. However, on the other side of the very same coin, we are sitting here, all of us, pondering as to the effectiveness of the implementation of mandatory audit firm rotation, where we are all in agreement to say if it doesn't achieve transformation, if it doesn't deal with the market concentration, it will be just in vain, because it's just going to be amongst those who are there at this point in time. And this point is important because it should never be raised as a substitute of the mandatory audit firm rotation. As IRBA, we have the Act that governs our execution of duties, and Chair, it is within that Act that we will continue to assess where the profession is. We will continue to make calls, and some of those calls will be hard. Like one member said here, that as a regulator, we don't expect to be loved by those we are regulating. But it is by no means, Chair, an abuse of our power and our muscle. In terms of the legal battles, we have received threats, yes, Chair, about them. And we're expecting those threats because, remember, we're touching the nerve here of those who have resources, who have amassed so much wealth because they've been in privileged positions. And they will do what they need to do to protect what they have. But we're not going to be faced by that. We're not going to back down as the regulator and not do what we think is right. We'll do that, and then we'll face the day when it comes. And yes, we are not promoting any hostility, and we don't want to be seen as an aggressive regulator. However, it's also reasonable for those to be part of the enhancement of the profession, and where we believe this is contributing to the enhancement and furthering the interest and the protection of the investing world, we feel is the right decision that we've taken, and we're going to pursue the implementation of this decision despite such threats. When it comes to the fragmentation, member, I did raise it to say I acknowledge your point, and indeed we will not achieve all this when we open ourselves, I'm talking now to the black firms, to being criticized, and rightly so, in terms of the lack of experience, the lack of capacity, and the size of mandate, because we cannot bite more than what we can chew. When we were taking the decision to implement this, I raised with my fellow members at IRBA to say now is the time that we will engage with this 2,000.
You have 4 minutes, but it's fine. We'll give you some latitude, but if we can.
We will, thank you, Chair. We will engage with these four, with these 2,000 outside the Big Four, precisely on this point. And their argument was simple, to say, once we had very little on the table to work with, there was no point in us acquiring your skills. We're not going to be auditing the insurances, nor the banks, because all we could get were just the public sector audits, and even those come with some rotations. So we were not, but if we can see some light at the end of the tunnel to say opportunities are coming, we are ready for that. So the organization like BCAP are the people that we are talking to say you will not remain this fragmented, otherwise you will not see the light of day. So assist us as IRBA as well to create that capacity that we can point to as we implement our initiatives. And I think the last point was that of us negotiating with our stakeholders. The effective date of this mandatory audit firm rotation is 2023. In fact, Chair, some of the supporters, why is it taking you so long to implement what is necessary to today. And it is precisely for that that all the participants are prepared. All the participants would have come to the fore and raised the issues that they have. We as IRPA would have addressed all these shortcomings that you have raised at this house and my esteemed colleagues in making sure that there's successful implementation of mandatory audit firm rotation. So, Chair, we'll continue to negotiate. Thank you.
Treasury?
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to take up too much time. I think what we hear is that as National Treasury and the Minister, we must ensure that there's proper governance at the IRBA as the entity, and I think we will definitely look into that to make sure that that board is strengthened and that the work continues as we would like to see fit. And I think that's a proper, important role that we can play. I also hear that we can assist perhaps with the monitoring of this. We know the committee is busy, and it might be worthwhile for National Treasury as an independent party to perhaps assist with the monitoring, either in the short term with the effect of the transformation, or perhaps even in the longer term with the effect of mandatory audit firm rotation. Has it achieved its objectives? I think we will be willing to assist with that, to work with the committee. Thanks.
Start then with the 2 minutes each for the other three stakeholders quickly. They are statutory bodies, you know, but you matter. This is your hearing more than this. Okay, so who wants to go first? Okay, Bika.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just start on the issue of consolidation. Certainly, just maybe to echo what the chairperson of RBA has indicated with regards to BCAP, that's where basically the black chartered accountants practitioners got together to then say, well, we've got to have a voice. You know, you can't necessarily, you know, be asking for anything else if you don't have bread on the table. So we have gotten together as practitioners. It is a representative of the smaller practitioners within the market at the moment. And I think if just to take you a step back as well, there has been some kind of consolidation in the market, and we're seeing some of those large players in the field. We can take SNG as an example, Seasons Aluwa Kobodo, as one of those mergers. We can take Segela Claviso, and we seen them also have huge muscle in the market, and some recent ones that have taken place. So there is certainly room for that, and I think we'll start to see a lot more as bigger bites of the work do come in the market, without a doubt. But as I think as the key thing is that there is a voice of the practitioners gotten together, who then are speaking from one voice, without a doubt.
Thank you, Chair. I think I would equally sort of support the concern around, or the question around, whether we as organizations can be working a lot better together, because of the fact that, look, this is, as much as our profession has got so many members, it's one that we all guard very closely. And in turn, I think at the end of the day, that the spirit and the view of what we like to see in this profession is consistent across the board, and being able to sit around the table and really hash out these kinds of issues is critical and crucial for us. So I, you know, certainly echo that view. In turn, you know, it would be greater to see, for instance, in the participation of the SACA forum, all members are present, and at the same time, In the forum and the roundtable discussion that the IRBA is looking to have, that we ensure that we all is committed to actually seeing this process through. I think that will hopefully also address the concerns around engagement of all parties, that if we are participating either actively physically or through the commentary, that we do ensure that there's common ground, a common view on this, and we ensure that we do protect this and keep, you know, guarding this profession that we hold in such high regard. And I think, you know, increasingly it can also assist in ensuring that we do win a lot more persons over. What might be certainly a thought that we do need to look into is, you know, as was highlighted by Bob Nombembe, that majority of chartered accountants and thus ultimate industry players are not necessarily in the auditing space. So how do we also in these engagements ensure that they are part of that decision making and then whatever processes go forward, because they are the very audit committee members and CFOs and the likes, executives that we, and mind you, shareholders at times, that we're also saying are not seemingly on the same page as the rest of us.
Right. The outstanding matter, I think, can we apply our mind to this? It would be Osaika, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also echo the sentiments that more players in the transformation blueprint of the profession are more than welcome. And if the committee is prepared to make itself available in this process as observers or as contributors, you're more than welcome to participate. Once again, the participation of regulators in this process, as I've indicated, this is a multi-regulatory landscape that requires the recognition of multiple players beyond just the auditing profession, who will enable the wishes of the audit regulator to happen. We will also need all those regulators as well. So that's another area that we will pursue. And as SAICA, we will, march forward with a lot more vigor in pursuing what you have requested us to pursue, which is to facilitate the unity of the profession around the issues of transformation. And to the extent that also we can achieve that, that's basically what this SAICA constitution, by the way, in its object number 5, demands. The transformation is one of the things that SAICA was formed to accomplish, and we are firmly on that journey. Yes, we've got limitations, and those limitations cannot be defined as basically our failures. We're committed to succeed. That's why we formed this platform, to basically demonstrate commitment to that SAICA primary object of achieving transformation.
Can I just summarize it quickly like this about the way forward? One is just to alert you, in the pipeline for this year are 10 bills. We've got 3 so far. So, you know, we're agreeing that we will seek, notice the words, we'll seek to meet with you twice a year, beginning from January next year. We will try, if possible, to meet with you again in November. We will, by next week, decide whether we will send people to all your meetings. It doesn't have to be a Gauteng-based person, because Parliament will pay. And if possible, we will also send a researcher, Zakele or Antonio, we can discuss that, to monitor. So these are things we can think about and decide next week. We want to thank you very much. We will do our report. The tentative dates, I can tell you now, tentative is Tuesday, the 8th of August. We will consider the draft report, and we will vote on it within a week of that, I would imagine. Okay, thank you very much. Nothing stops you from making further representations to us, writing in reply, in written form, to the questions, right? On the program, the final item on the agenda is the program. You've got the program. Tandi, can you stop disrupting, please? The program is with you for the third quarter. There was a mistake, actually, because it was done late yesterday in a hurry. Can we make 2 changes? The first change would be Wednesday the 13th of September. It's actually the third quarterly briefing from National Treasury and SARS. In the morning, in the afternoon, it's SAA. Because we have taken decisions, we'll do quarterly for SAA as well. Apart from that, we have to tell you that Thursday the 14th of September is a sitting day of Parliament. If there are no caucuses that morning, we'll sit all day with the insurance bill. If there are caucuses, we will sit from 2 o'clock. Right? Then the final thing is, you must remember that this program will change because of a variety of considerations, but one of which is the Money Bills Act, we need four committees. The HBL, we need two committees. Illicit financial flows, we need four committees. And transformation of the financial sector, we need two committees. So they often tell us no, they will finalize their program first. So that's why it's tentative. Then to also say, as I said earlier, Alan reminded me that the decision was taken to have the Money Bills Act meeting, the next one, on Wednesday next. So on Wednesday next, that will be the focus, and I don't think we're going to sit here for the whole day. So what we will do is we'll take a slot off to look at how the committee should function. If need be, we'll meet in the afternoon for an hour and a half. But we have to now discuss the matter before we start the third quarter. Right, any comments? Yes, Mr. Mania?
Chair, as I've said before, we would certainly welcome the conversation which you've just mentioned. Some time ago, I sent you a list of suggestions from our perspective on hearings for the third term. You'll recall that list. Which one of those have been included here?
That has been covered already. Thank you. Anything else?
So, Chair, is there any purpose in the opposition making
no,
any
No, we covered it in a meeting that you are not at present at. We're not going to cover it. I went out of my way, and I'm not going to do it again. The proposals you had to do with the Public Service and Administration Committee, I spoke to Makosi, she's handling that matter. The other one dealt with nuclear. I went to Fikile Majola, he said they were having hearings. I reported while you were here that the hearings are on these dates. I think they didn't have them, but there's nothing I can do about it. As for the PIC, it's in the fourth quarter, only if we have time, and we'll vote on it. And given the performance of the DA last week, you know, you don't inspire any goodwill. Look at the amount of energy that was wasted over nothing. We did everything according to the book. But there you are. So on the PIC, we included it for the fourth quarter, and there was a fourth thing. And really, can you plead with your members who are here to report to you or read the minutes? The PMG minutes come out fairly quickly, and they're fairly accurate. So is there anything else? That was addressed in a meeting.
Were there any other items on that list?
Not that I know of.
You might revisit that list, Chair. But it's evident to us that there's no purpose in putting forward any suggestions because they're simply rejected.
No. Absolutely not. Look, the time and waste, Mr. Mania. Look,
we are the reviewers.
I went on your behalf, your committee member that should have been there. Your committee member is not performing, or you taking over his or her role in energy. I went to that committee. You have a committee member in public service and administration. Which other committee chair would do that? I went there, and she said they're managing the matter. Now, in regard to PIC, we agreed it's a fourth quarter. Then there was one more issue we agreed to, and we split it somewhere. I think we addressed it this quarter. Now, Alan, is there any other thing you can remember? Yeah. So we've addressed it. Two of the issues we've included. Two of the issues got nothing to do with us except unless another committee calls us to that meeting. Tandi, and it's really abuse, actually, Mr. Mania. Abuse, once again.
Chair, I beg for you to reconsider what you just said.